what's really going on the job sites? Women in the trades being respected in the trades, do they have the right PPE? Do they have the right washrooms? Are you seeing that improve? And obviously you were on the job site way back when. What are you seeing the evolution?
What an evolution, right? I mean, I remember in 2010, 2011, I mean, worst of the recession, I was running a couple of departments. I was also lucky, by the way, I think mentorship really comes into this. But I just remember a quick story of saying, in terms of getting the credibility on the job, if you don't have the mentorship and the sponsorship, which is typically men, because that is who is holding the power, I'm just statement of fact. I had a division president who would take me in the car and we would do the job site rotations. We would see all the subs. We would talk about it and say, hey, why is this delayed? What's going on here? I'm not seeing the quality that I need. I know exactly how to walk a job site. Didn't matter what I wore, whatever I was wearing. If I was him, he would be the first one to say when all of those contractors would be coming up and those foremen, they would start directing questions to him. And he would say, she's going to answer any questions you got.
Any clue how important blue-collar workers are? If we didn't have awesome blue-collar workers, our lives would cease to exist.
This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast.
Debunking myths and shining a spotlight on the unsung heroes of our economy. We'll talk about everything from plumbing and electrical work to welding and beyond. Because let's face it, these are the backbone of our infrastructure. We'll talk about the skilled trades gap and uncover the countless benefits of pursuing a path in the trades. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. And now your host, a passionate advocate for the trades, this is Andrew Brown.
We're about to ignite a conversation with a true trailblazer in the world of welding construction. Demi Nye Clark isn't just breaking barriers. She's welding them back together with the power of focus, breath, and fire. Join us as we explore how Demi is empowering the next generation of young girls to spark their own journeys in the trades and beyond. Let's dive into her story of resilience, inspiration, and the flames that are lighting the way for a brighter future. Demi, welcome to the show.
Wow, thanks. I got to like steal some of that from my bio. You got some good metaphors for welding.
Well, you have an exciting career and I want to get right into it, but I have a burning question for you. I didn't have a blowtorch to use, so I have this welding helmet. But what would happen if we gave more girls blowtorches?
Yeah, so you could watch the TED, which clearly you have. My TED talk was that exact title of what would happen if we gave more girls blowtorches. And I said that to be deliberately a little bit, you know, stick it in the craw of like, ooh, is it dangerous? Is it because I get that a lot from especially today's parents? I am one of 18 and 20 year old daughters. So I've lived that little bit of the helicopter parent lifestyle. You know, in this generation of kids, we don't, you know, let our kids out on the street with stranger danger. And there's not a lot of kids in the workshop anymore, right? And there's not a lot of adults, let's face it. So that was my way of saying like, ooh, what do you think immediately when I ask you that question? And honestly, based on my history of starting a nonprofit before, was She Built the City, where we were putting power tools in girls' hands, which was more of my classical background, they grew capes out the back of them. These girls were saying, give me another one. 7, 8-year-old girls with power tools. It is safe when it is supervised. Big caveat, because I don't want people coming after me or you. They have PPE and we just put them back to using their hands. And I think that's something that you talk about a lot and we talk about in skilled trades. We know it. It's just introducing with onboard ramps to a whole generation and a generation of adults, quite frankly, who have not put tools in their hands, whether that be a welding torch and a blowtorch or oxytorch or electrode. There's plenty of different ways to get welding instruments in your hands. Or if it's power tools, construction tools, all the things to be on a job site.
I do want to get into that side of your career or She Built This City, but I want to back up for a second. I want to go back to when you were 5 years old and you were building derby cars side by side with your father. You were also very influenced by your grandmother, Priscilla. And I want you to explain to the audience a little bit further how that really got you interested in the trades or the welding trade.
Yeah, thanks. And I appreciate that, especially with my grandmother. It's a big part. You know, we all have our history and our DNA. And I did not realize until I actually got to career age, like I went to college. So once I got out of college and started choosing my real, what I wanted to do, which is a whole nother story, kind of stumbled back into the trades and construction, thanks to the recession. My initial was my dad was an engineer. I was surrounded by military sappers. Any other military folks out there, they're the military engineers. He was a mechanical and nuclear engineer, multiple degrees. I was born at West Point. Did not realize I had them all around me with my grandfather. My brother was aerospace. And so from an early age, we were failing. My dad was putting us in the workshop out back. He was building things. My brother was a Boy Scout. So Pinewood Derby. I want to make the qualification because I live in NASCAR country. So people would be like, what? Derby? You doing snowball derby? Like, what are you doing? No, not those type of derby cars, but Pinewood Derby cars. I was 5. My brother was 9. He was 4 years older than me. So at a very early age, I had power tools in my hand or soldering. And before that, my grandmother was one of the first female Marines. It's on my TED if anybody wants to see the whole story. But she's now in the Women's War Memorial in Arlington, honored. And then also I'm getting her into Rosie the Riveter Trust in California, their wall of trust. So 500,000 women left their homes in a time when we needed them to go basically rebuild America while the men were away. And that's making it gender specific. But they really had to give those pails back and those welding torches back and multiple different trades that they went into on our way. And so what I'm trying to do is reignite that, because I grew up with that DNA of a grandmother who said, you can do anything. I want you to go for this. I want you to get dirty. I want you to dig the ditch. And then a father that reinforced that, not making about pink or blue or any of that when I'm a kid of the 80s, I'm 47. So it's pretty old. And then me going into Title IX sports. So until I got into careers, like I said, I think that's why I was the only woman in the room in many cases, because I was built in and instilled to say it doesn't matter. Like, just go to the places that kind of scare you or fail. That's one of my biggest topics right now is engineers by trade are taught to fail. And so that's why they're so comfortable with failing and then saying, fix it or repurpose it, do it again. They do this in the technology fields as well. We don't do that in the trades. We don't teach our kids that. So I think it has so many different myriad of benefits to kids if we do that. And it also brings us back to having them love the trades if they can fail.
Parents have such an impact, you don't realize, on your upbringing. What's said in the household? And I always talk about this in a lot of my content. It is what's really spoken about in the household. Is a blue collar working with your hands really kind of spoken about a trades path? And it seems like it was from your father, grandmother, just you were around that and you were exposed to that. So it was okay for you to go into the trades. But what do you say to parents sort of out there that really don't know about the trades, that look down on the trades, that there's low wages, that it might just be an option B for the bad kids? What do you say to that out there and debunk those old myths?
Oh, there we go on the paradigms. I mean, I think it's just that. It's a paradigm and the stigmas are real. And that's a big part of what I'm trying to bring to the industry in a couple of different ways of onboard programs from here forward after really studying it this last year. First, it's destigmatization of the trades. We can't just keep trying to solve and say, we need more X, you know, like it's easy for us. And we know it's a real statement to say we need 400,000 welders. We need 1 million. I think the department, Secretary of Commerce, Raimondo, she did an awesome program with NABTU that's like 1 million women in construction. Absolutely on board with that. To me, I'm more of a granular person that brings it down to how do we have to culturally address that? We know the need. And so now let's back into it and say, what do we have to address that's a roadblock? The biggest is destigmatization. And honestly, I would say as a kid of the 80s, I graduated from college. I still went to college in a family that said, hey, you do whatever you want to do. We want you picking up power tools. We want you to have hand skills. We want you to be able to, you know, go out there and live. And if you had to be survive and alive or whatever, you know, newest show is out there, we want you to survive, be part of The Last of Us and keep standing. I went to college because I still felt that pressure. I had multiple degrees in my family. Everyone was MBAs. So it was like, oh, I love this. And I went to school for journalism. So until I lost my dot-com boom job in 2000 with Y2K, I'm really taking it back there. So I know I sound ancient to some of the population listening to this. I then said, what's the most stable career I could get? And I went to D.R. Horton Homes. I went to the largest home builder in the world. And I said, let me work my way up. And I did all the rotation of everything out in the field, everything in-house. So purchasing, land development, land acquisition, and then rose my way up into management ranks that way. So I had to backdoor into it even in 2000. So multiply now, trade schools went away in the late 90s. I think I was one of the last ones to actually be in a VOTEC class in industrial technology in seventh grade using a drill press. And then it kind of went away. We then had a dot-com boom. And so now these kids have had a lot of STEM. So we just need to destigmatize it. And I think you know me, I get really passionate about blue collar, white collar, and then I'll shut up because I've talked too long, is it can't be about the color of the collar for this generation. They've got tech CEOs and YouTube influencers with hoodies. they're not even wearing a collar, right? Who are CEOs making millions. So we just have to repurpose that in talking to the parents and then also in talking to this next generation of making it cool again in the way that they know and they have consumed information in 2000 to 2024 and beyond. So it starts with, I think, stopping talking about the color of the collar and starting talking about gig economy. How does this fit into this? And then how much you can earn. End of story. They want money.
Well, the data is out there about Gen Z and they're becoming the tool belt generation. If you've seen that article, they are the generation that may be the tool belt generation. They are seeing the handwriting on the wall that the college path versus a trades path, it's extremely, extremely expensive. Now, I went to college for 4 years and I came out with a business degree, but I started off as a programmer and switched my major 5 times and came out more confused out of school than when I was in school. And nobody told me about a trades path. My parents didn't sit down and say, you know, son, you are pretty good with your hands. Maybe you should consider going into trades or at least exploring it at that point. But it wasn't. It was just expected to me to go to college and become this person that, I don't know, 4 years, what was I doing for 4 years? I was in a fraternity. I was partying. I did other things, but I didn't come out as expected as I would. And I didn't get the help that I needed. I'm for college. But for the right people, I'm not anti-college, I am pro-college, but it's not built for everybody. And I feel like we're just feeding people into the education system and people are coming out or kids are coming out a little bit disappointed with all this debt and they're not getting the right jobs. Where a trades path, like you did both, you had that trades path and you sort of had the education behind it. And you had mentioned that the job obviously went away in journalism, or didn't work out the way that you wanted to, but you were able to go back into the trades field. And essentially, that's what you grew up on. And you were around that.
If I hadn't had that, I don't think I would have had the support to say, again, it goes back to that destigmatization, right? Of like, oh, your family doesn't think you're a failure or an alter, you know, I hate the word alternative. I don't use hate very often. That's a very strong choice of words, but there's a few things I hate. And using alternative when it's a choice. Again, it's just changing the narrative of how we talk about the trades versus college. And P.S., I've got college-age kids. I'm in the suburb of Charlotte. I got one at Clemson. She's architecture and engineering, yay STEM. Something rubbed off on her. And then the other one is going to University of South Carolina. She's a music kid. So both got scholarships. We're in state. So we have grade 529. So we're doing it economically. But I also never said to them, better not do trades. They have 3 friends that are, and I say three, we're in an academically advanced district. So again, to your point earlier of, is it for the disadvantaged kids? Let's stop that narrative too. College on average is costing $120,000. I know I'm sitting in that spot of paying tuition out of a 529, thank goodness. But if it was just a check or if it was heavy, heavy debt with a FAFSA, it's all real. And then what are they realizing once they graduate, to your point? I think it's the narrative to me changes. One, this destigmatization is a number one. And then culturally putting this into a world where it's accepted, which is a whole nother bailiwick of talking about, of saying, what if Taylor Swift picked up a blowtorch? Holy cow. We'd have a whole lot of welders after that. So that's part of my plan. But really, it's more about saying, hey, the narrative is it's a choice. And then also, how do they get to those outlets? It's not them giving up on life. There's absolutely affluent families or kids that are just saying, like, college, I can come back to college. You can come back. And so what I'm hearing more of to that point that I would love to hear you keep pushing this out to the world and starting asking questions around is, I'm challenging the industry to talk differently about this and maybe strategize differently, is life skills. I have spoken with so many schools that are welding schools specifically, or these technology, like in my area, there's the technology colleges and the community colleges. Out of those 18-month programs or a 900-hour program to welding, let's call it, a good half of that is teaching them how to show up on the job, which, let's not make that about Gen Z. They're not lazy. They're not TikTokers who don't want to work. We were all that. We all had to be trained to show up on a job to say, how do you balance a checkbook way back when? Now it's your digital banking and Chime and all these things, but how to deal with life? So a good portion of that at any schools, just like at college in the first year with your gen ed studies, is dealing with life skills. So that's where we have to acknowledge it, is saying, we got to teach kids better life skills first and then give them the exposure to a lot of these things earlier again. We took out trades out of their programs. Now it's STEM. And that's part of my solution, is saying it's too heavy of a lift to try to put trades back in high schools. The ones that exist, great, let's expand them. But rather than having to have terrestrial space, partner with the STEM programs that are already there, already in robotics, teach them the future of the trades, which includes a lot of AI, includes a lot of STEM technologies of what they'd be doing on the job. And then that's your pipeline that gets them in. And then with that is the destigmatization of saying, it's not about the color of the collar. You could be a gray collar, but you could also be making $200,000 a year. And it could be gigs. With welding, we could be doing stuff on the weekend for $200 an hour off of a rig truck, but then also have a day job. This generation loves to hear about flexibility. So it's just approaching them and exposing them differently. And we got to stop doing it the same way we've been doing it the last 20 years and just complaining and saying, we need more, right? I could go on for hours about that. I apologize. I get very passionate about that.
There is a model trade school called the Williamson College of the Trades. I don't know if you've heard about it.
I've heard it. Yeah, I've actually been there. That's Pennsylvania, right?
It's in Pennsylvania. So I was there last month and I met with President Rounds. I went on the tour. And essentially, for anybody who doesn't know, Williamson College of the Trades takes in about 300 kids, mostly men, young adults, and usually from tough backgrounds and they can't afford school. They take them in and they give them a three-year program, free of charge, free room board. They learn a trade. They learn soft skills, what you're talking about, how to be upstanding citizens. They have to wear a suit. They have to shine their shoes. They're raising the flag in the morning. And I met a handful of these young adults. I was shocked, beyond shocked, of the tour guide that I was with. He was unbelievable. He is going to be in carpentry. On top of, he's like, I want to own my own business one day. He wants to be entrepreneurial. That school is setting kids up for success. Now, if you were to factor all that in tuition-wise, room board, it's $100,000 per student. And they go for free. On top of this, what I didn't mention is that the seniors, usually it's like 75, 85 seniors, there's 150 companies that show up for a job fair. And 150 companies are all fighting for 75 students and 95% of them get jobs. And they're starting out with $60,000, $70,000 in a job salary. And there's no debt. I mean, I said, why aren't there 10 schools like this? Obviously, it comes down to fundraising and money. That is a perfect model out there to teach kids not only a skill trade, but soft skills of how to show up on the job site, how to be respectful. I was just blown away.
How to speak publicly, how to look them in the eye. I mean, I know that with my 18-year-olds, half her friends weren't looking me in the eye their freshman, sophomore year. And I mean, I guess I'm that parent who's like, come on, right here. You know, and so they joke with me now, but it's mind-blowing when you kind of like start peeling back that onion of don't judge it, just acknowledge that it exists and validate it so that we can, before they get into the workforce, really address that to what you're talking about and then help arm these schools that do exist, like Williamson, who are doing it differently. And then if we have other terrestrial schools across the country, which we do, let's give them the same types of resources. And then on top of that, this is a layered technique, right? Of now we got to give them a pipeline. It's kids all over that could benefit from this as a choice.
There is an inspiring iron worker, maybe you know her, Jamie McMillan up in Canada. So I love Jamie McMillan in a sense of the inspiration. So I got to meet her two times, one in Las Vegas, and I was on a panel with her and I was blown away. The other time we were in New Jersey at a technical school. She did a speech. She introduced me to 300 kids. I made a small speech, and then we went around the whole technical school and looked at every single department, construction, healthcare, everything in the trades. I was blown away, not only by obviously the school, but also what she does. And during her panel, she was a keynote speaker actually at that show, and she talked about, and I know about this, but I want to hear your thoughts. What's really going on the job sites? Women in the trades, being respected in the trades, do they have the right PPE? Do they have the right washrooms? Are you seeing that improve? And obviously, you were on the job site way back when. What are you seeing, the evolution?
What an evolution, right? I mean, I remember in 2010, 2011, I mean, worst of the recession, I was running a couple of departments. I was also lucky, by the way. I think mentorship really comes into this. So hopefully, I don't bounce around too much on this answer. Absolutely valid. And for her to talk about it, valid as well. But I just remember a quick story of saying, in terms of getting the credibility on the job, if you don't have the mentorship and the sponsorship, which is typically men, because that is who is holding the power, I'm just a statement of fact, it's gotten better. But back then it was, I had a division president who would take me in the car and we would do the job site rotations. We would see all the subs. We would talk about it and say, hey, why is this delayed? what's going on here? I'm not seeing the quality that I need. I know exactly how to walk a job site. Didn't matter what I wore, but whatever I was wearing, if I was him, he would be the first one to say when all of those contractors would be coming up and those foremen, they would start directing questions to him. And he would say, that's the one you need to see. She's going to answer any questions you got. If I hadn't had that, would have been way harder lift for me to get my credibility, my point across. So I think that fast forward to 2024 still exists. And I just spoke about this at Coverings in Atlanta last week of there were men in the room. It was primarily women. I don't need to talk to women. We get it. We know exactly what needs to happen. I like to speak more to male CEOs or men because we need to create what I call hospitable environments. That is the changing rooms. That is the PPE. We've gotten a lot better. And PS, two shout outs to some amazing companies. I live, eat, breathe, and die in Ember products for fire retardant, as well as Dovetail. Pay attention to those women-led organizations who are really like spreading the fire of we love pockets. Just like at the Met Gala, we still love pockets in the trades. But really, it's if men want to do anything, I love allyship. We can go preach about allyship on panels all day. But if they truly want to do something differently, no man who is leading a company is trying to say, oh, let's keep out the women. You know, it's not like he's Gru, you know, like trying to just say, oh, more women in my company. We want all men. That's absolutely unreal. It's just they have had to deal with who comes in the door. And we have not made hospitable environments for childcare, changing rooms, bullying, all the things. But really, it's more of saying, what could you be doing? The room is open. We've had more women in the room than we ever had before, at least one in the room in most industries, especially trades. But now it's about propping the door open and saying, how can the men in the room, if it's just one woman, don't put it on her shoulders to amplify it for the rest and say, come on with me. It has to be a good environment overall. So that means hospitable environment, not only physically in the environment, but then also culturally and saying, how do you keep those women there? And if you need to, raise your hand and say, I don't know how. And that is okay. Ask women in your organization, hire DE&I consultants, hire someone. It's worth every penny because your recruiting is going to get better because you're going to bring in more of a population that makes it diverse to make your processes better. And then you're not always just clamoring to rehire positions that are quitting or aging out. The end. I'm really about in this era, I'm all about what Jamie's saying. It's more for me of being in the space of going direct to men and saying, how can I create this to be a safe space so that anything you say is okay? I know you're an ally. Now tell me what your roadblocks are so that we can make this a long-term hospitable environment for more and more women, non-binary, all of the populations to come in that you're not seeing come in here that keeps a healthy, robust culture.
Well, for 5%, and I believe that's the latest from the American Welding Society, there's only 5% in welding for women. And you had said it is 330,000 welders that we need by 2028. Well, that's 82,500 per year, or 159,000 welders are set to retire or at retirement age. How do you go back to women who just say, look, I don't feel comfortable in welding. I don't feel comfortable working on a job site with men. I mean, it's really, I think, pushing women back that that's not why they're joining the trades. Are you seeing that from your perspective?
I appreciate that perspective because I think, again, we need to create more safe rooms, for lack of better terms, with norms of saying like, there's nothing off the table here. We've got to say it how you know how to say it, and then let's try to address it more globally. Like what I hear when you say that is, so immediately I hear it and internalize to myself when you said it this way, and this is acknowledging it, there's no emotional weight to this of, hey, women might be put off by that or not want to work in that. Right now, those aren't my people. And that's okay that women don't want to work in that. I am looking for the ones that the light bulb is turned on to say, maybe they're in something else. I talked to a volunteer firefighter the other day and she's like, I've always wanted to pick up a torch. You're my people. Let's get you started. So I'm focused more on that like bottom of the onboard ramp to try to address this first year of like, if it's the 82,000, let's go after that. We got to have a long game for the 2028. So the schools are the long game to say, okay, as you're talking, immediately I go to data and numbers and I'm like, okay, so what does that mean? That's my extra question is like, so how many are these schools graduating across the US? If we're going to keep this to US statistics, I should know that answer. Is it, you know, 100,000? Is it 2,000? So we're not doing enough to say, hey, we've got them coming through the school pipeline. So now we need to look at career changers, which is a big part of my focus. I'm looking at the top of the funnel with kids, and I'm looking at the bottom of the funnel with ones who could change careers at age 22, have the life skills. And that's why my partnership with Goodwill is about to jump in June to say 1 week class of welding. You already know all the other stuff. You can blueprint read. You've been through career counseling. Now you said, I have an interest in this. I just have no idea where I would start, and we'll put you in the job and you'll continue in your apprenticeship or you will have your on-the-job training. So that's my approach, is to say, it is all well and good if you're not comfortable with a male environment or a male dominated, however we want to phrase it today, male sourced environment. That might not be for you. Maybe in 5 years, once you see like what people are making and you're comfortable talking to other people. But I want the ones who are ready to say, I'm ready for a change. I want a challenge. This doesn't scare me and I'm going to be part of the change. What we need to promise to those women and non-binary individuals, quite frankly, because we don't even talk about that, that's a whole nother hour, is to say, is that company? And that's what I'm very protective of, is when I start saying, hey, I have a woman who's really interested. She's already picked up a TIG torch and holy cow, she's just running beads like you wouldn't believe. She could get a month or two with you and really be working on the line and then could be in your management staff. I need to know that that company has wraparound services to make sure that that culture is set to work with the changes in the flux that we need to make it, you know, 50-50. Also had people say that to me, like, Demi, what is a 50-50 environment going to do? One, it's going to help your culture. Two, it's going to help have such a range of thought and solution ideas if you're really a good culture that's asking those questions of all levels of your company. And it's just better for everyone, like the end, because the exposure is going to be there through both parents if they have kids. So
I think the earlier you can get to kids, even earlier than high school, to expose them. And you said it, shop class was taken out, so they're like non-existent.
This is a self-fulfilling prophecy. We shouldn't be like, oh, why are they not going in the trades? We took it away because it was a tech boom with Google and the internet and everything else. It's okay. We just have to now figure out what we want to do with it, right?
Exactly. And I don't remember taking a shop class when I was younger, maybe a woodworking, but I never took shop class. I don't even think it was even available in my school. So I always say that if somebody has a technical spark or good with their hands, I feel like sometimes they are passed over. They just go into college and they bypass the trades career altogether. I think it comes down to career exploration. We are not doing a good enough job. I know I want to be a welder. I know I want to be a plumber. I know I want to be an electrician, but I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. I don't have anybody I know that's an electrician. I have no one in my family. And a guidance counselor is not saying, well, you know, great. Here's the information on it. There are organizations like Explore the Trades. Kate Cimeno is on our STACK, Skilled Trades Advisory Council board. And one of the things that she's doing is getting posters out to all the schools around the country of career exploration. And I have them on my wall. You can't see them, but it tells kids how to get into that trade, how much they can make, what they can do, who they can talk to. I feel that's a big miss.
It's a massive miss. And I mean, I'll speak to my own daughters who, again, we're in a very college-focused district. We chose it probably for that, to have, you know, air quote, great instruction at the middle and high school level and great choices, which I think is every parent, right? You want the best for your kids. It's a matter of if you can do that or not, depending on where you are economically, socially, wherever, geographically. But in seventh grade, they go through the whole, or eighth grade, sorry, you have to sit down in the middle schools and sit with a guidance counselor and say, you're undecided, your college or your trades. Both my daughters knew me well, and they both went in and said undecided. And they were absolutely, I mean, we were sitting right next to them, myself and my husband, and it was like the whip of the face to us of like, what? You know, clutch the pearls, all the things. And I was like, no, they're going to be undecided. And she's like, I can't get them in the classes they need to get to in ninth grade. So there's this, we need to go through to these guidance counselors and to all schools and say, you've got to stop starting. That doesn't sound right, but we can't do this to kids as early as eighth grade saying, no, do not be undecided. It's again, like, God forbid they want to explore, to your point. We have got to embrace this. Let them do whatever they need to do. There should be gen ed classes they're in ninth grade. And so I think at the school level, I don't know how to approach it myself because it is a bit of a big lift, but I think places and people like you just spoke about, like that is a great initiative to start, is we've got to change the mindset of these guidance counselors. Because a lot of the times, again, we're a self-fulfilling prophecy where we are stopping their exploration, not just not giving them resources to the exploration. We're actually pushing them against it to say like, oh, no. Like you've got to do this because remember, you want to be in AP classes by your senior year. And they're telling all kids that. So I know that's a hyper example of mine, but I knew at an early age with both of my kids, like I've got to even more so get them out in workshops and using their hands and in jobs in the summer, building things or on habitat. So I'm way in the trade. So if that was hard for me, I absolutely say we've got to hit it hard to try to change this.
So last week I was at the Philadelphia Phillies baseball stadium and we did a skilled trades day. And there was STACK and the Phillies and Nest, who is a gentleman by the name of Rob Allman, who's also on our council, his company, worked together to do this trades day at the stadium. So we took about 80 students from a technical school and brought them down to the stadium and showed them everything about the stadium and all the facilities management, from cabinetry to electrical to welding, all across the board. Actually took these kids on a tour to show them exactly what they can do with their hands, how much money they can make, and just be a part of something really exciting, working in a stadium. And that's what I feel that we need to do. Take kids down to a job site, take them down to a stadium, building, whatever it may be. Show them exactly that you're not just building a school, you're just building a school for education. You're building roads and tunnels and bridges for people to get to work. You're building buildings for people to have jobs. There's a lot more to that that some companies are doing, but I think we can be a little bit more proactive of doing that instead of being reactive. Are you seeing any of those type of programs out there?
Not enough. I think that was phenomenal what you took part in, and more of that, please. Say less, you know, but I mean, and I'm trying to speak to the Gen Zers in my household who are both at school. It's changing the vernacular, changing the lexicon, and then doing exactly what you're saying of speaking to them, speaking to how they consume information or how it's attractive to them or cool. They consume in TikTok or YouTube or Instagram, and all of us do, P.S. It's not just Gen Z, you know, 3-minute span. I mean, an hour podcast is like an eternity to people, right? So for them to say, I'm interested in this, you've got to put it in real world of what's cool to them and then light the fire, light the spark, ignite the spark, whatever you want to call it, and get them immersed in it and say, you know what? Not only can you earn money, but look at, and this is a, Nate's going to kill me for this, but he needs to talk about it more. And he's starting to do more Instagrams about it. He's a very successful welder. He owns his own company as well as influencing with Lincoln Electric. And I could name a million Nates, but Nate is so special to me as a friend and collaborator. I remember this last year when he bought his first Porsche. He's a 911 guy. And he was just like, oh, and it's a classic car, but also not inexpensive. And he's like, I don't want to post this on Instagram. I don't want to look like I'm flashy and cashy. And I said, more of this, please, because you are crushing it as a welder. You could do anything. You could do any process, sideways, backwards. You go in and consult on this with companies. They call you first to save money, to do better, to find recruiting, to inspire their kids in the trade schools. So show these kids where you can go with a lot of grit, a lot of, you didn't just sit back and make this money. You have just earned it over time. And so those stories need to get to these kids too, of like, not only can you earn, you know, if I say today, if I walk into a high school and say, you could be earning over time $100,000 a year. To them, that's not monetized. They don't know what that's like. They've never done it. They've heard about it, you know, and whatever they're watching out in cultural, you know, whether TikTok or, you know, like shows they watch or stars on the Phillies. But that's not something that's like my day to day. How does that affect my budget? But when you can show them people that are in the job, and then also either I'm running my own company and now I can afford my beach house, that takes a few years, but that type of success. And then again, speak to their language of how is this relevant? I always take kids through and say, I was just at a company that is heavy manufacturing, and they produce all the restaurant implements with TIG welding, so thin steel fabrication of all the restaurant implements inside when you walk back in a kitchen. And they also work with Bellagio, P.F. Chang's, all these super cool places. And you can walk through a Bellagio any day of the week in Vegas and say, I did that on the wall. I did this. If you tell a kid who's 15, 16, and they're watching fights in Bellagio on YouTube, and you're like, you could walk through that ring of, you know, MMA fighters and say, we welded that. We welded that. That was my work. And that's also on your resume. Like, that's how you speak to this generation. In my opinion, there's multiple ways to speak to them, but we have got to put it to what you're saying in. Where are places that are really interesting to them and not, you know, let's do a factory tour. Like, that's once they love welding, we'll take them to a factory tour, but I better be telling them the trajectory if they're walking through a very boring factory. It's like, hey, listen, but you're going to walk through and see the Bellagio and say, I did that. And that is on, you know, use that on your TikTok. It's real.
Another way to get to kids. My kids are younger and I'm envisioning them because they're always on an iPad. They're always on Xbox, right? So it's gamification. How does that translate to welding? Because let's say cobot technology and maybe using an iPad, how much is technology and where obviously the welding industry is going? How would that get kids to be interested? Because they're using these devices today. What are you seeing out there?
I would say this is the first thing of when I called Nate, I emailed Nate when he was doing Well Labs because I saw what he was doing a couple of years ago. And I was like, this is a guy that's doing things differently. I don't want to just go to a school. I had already tried that. I had some great instructors. It was a bit of like, hey, I did this when I was on the job. So this is how I'm going to teach you. And I started asking really hard questions. And that's not always popular, right? It's like, hey, stick to the program. I was 45. So I was old enough to be like, nah, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions. So Nate was my compatriot of saying like, I will one, answer your email. And I'm curious as to why you want to know. And then two, here's what you need to do. Go buy the AWS manual for CWS. So Certified Welding Supervisor. Read it cover to cover and then come back to me. And he's like, I tell everybody that, by the way, and nobody does it. You're the first person that actually read it cover to cover. And I was like, well, you told me to do it. That's what we do in construction. And I came back to him and he was like, you know, the first thing is, I can't say this enough. We don't teach how to use the knobs and program your settings on the machine. I don't care if it's MIG, TIG, flux core, stick, whatever. Program right. In many schools that we're challenged with just doing that. And so how that translates to what you're asking is these kids, from a gamification standpoint, they could go like reprogram all of our homes. You know, that we don't have to teach them the tech piece of everything. How it translates so well and why I say welding is STEM all day, every day to get kids interested is we are going into a collaborative robot or straight robot, robotics technology side. You can absolutely get into that. That is not replacing hand welding, by the way, because that gets into a whole nother old schooler conversation. Well, I have some really great heated conversations, spicy, I'll call them, of saying we're always going to need the hand welding and the pieces and parts. It's when you don't want to sit there and do 1,000 of the same part every day. That's when we need cobots. That's when we need the kids coming in and taking the 4-week class that's at Lincoln Electric to go be that robotics technician. That's absolutely a STEM kid, or that's a kid that's been on their iPad. You could be also solving and building. I've been through 10 different R&D labs for these manufacturers who are like, we want our welders. They come in here and work with our engineers and say, hey, this really stinks. Like, I'm not getting fusion out here. It's metallurgy that they're working with. These are smart people. And they come in and they get to say, oh, I would build it like this. Suddenly you're giving them, like, they could almost build a company off that. So they are able to kind of tap into that side of their brain of, I'm not sitting there just welding parts and pieces. It's not that simple. You have to use a lot of bits and pieces of your brain that include STEM of what they're learning today. So that's a big part of my top of mind awareness is it's my daily life to say, how am I packaging this so that we can get either jobs filled or kids ignited and really asking questions to go over these guidance counselors and say, no, I'm interested in that because I've learned this in my robotics class or I've learned this off of being on my iPad. They solve, I mean, you know, even with little kids, they're solving things in seconds. So imagine putting that on manufacturing processes and challenges if you just let them run. And I've watched it in action. It's pretty amazing. And then they're really ingrained in your culture saying like, I love this company. They let me do some crazy stuff. I mean, I think it just goes back to letting them tinker and fail.
I had a chance to go to FabTech last year. And I work with the American Welding Society. I do some of their social media and volunteer, try to get the messaging out about the trades and welding. And I had a chance to go to their trailer in FabTech, which is a virtual welding, just like 5 or 6 Lincoln Electric virtual machines. And I took a video of it, of me doing it, and I got an 80. That was like really the first time I ever did it. Like 8 out of 100, I was like, wow, okay, I missed my calling. That's why I want to stay on the gamification side just for a quick moment. I could see that, and the kids were like lit up in the trailer doing this. And a lot of them just didn't, they're not in the welding trade. They're not thinking about the welding trade, just happened to pass through. How is VR changing sort of the industry of how you teach kids? It's one thing to do it with your hands and physically doing it, but also the excitement of doing VR and putting the goggles on.
Yeah, I think it's a good onboard ramp, for lack of a better term. I think I'm way overusing that right now, but it's okay. It's for an hour and it's needed in many different respects as these onboard ramps. That's the critical mass to me, is solving for that, making the roadblocks go away. That's the way to make the connection with this next generation. I mean, and I think that's where it's widely used right now, is on the road. I'm more about the populations they're going to. So it's like, I've had AWS scholarships. They've been a huge supporter of me. So we need you. We need to keep amplifying this message. I'm still in the turn it on its ear because I'm kind of an outsider coming into welding. So I can come from that lens of saying, okay, we can go to the FFA conventions and the ag events and the trade schools, but that's already introducing it to a population that's had it, you know, the light bulbs on. So now let's go to a STEM class with that same truck. Let's go and take it to places that it has never been seen and put VR there, or put it on YouTube and have them able to, you know, I don't have the actual program you could have that's downloaded by, you know, Apple iTunes, but those are the types of things that we've just got to get it to the new populations and stop expecting different results, you know, definition of insanity from the same populations. Like the FFA kids are already interested. They want to talk about pipe. They want to say, hey, yeah, absolutely. Let's do the VR. Let's go up there. And so now it's like, let's take it to a more expanded population and then grow that fleet 100%. But I think, yes, that will translate to today's kid. You know, any kid that's from 6 to semi-adult age of saying like, let's expose them to this in a different way. The VR is a start. You know, are they going to really be doing that once they get into school? For a little bit, but then again, it comes down. I think you can teach technique really well in a VR situation. I think that'll get even more expanded and better. And that's where I'm tinkering with, okay, do I want to put together, I need to get to these girls. And then if we're at pop-up events, which I don't want a terrestrial school, I'd much rather go to pop-up events and expose them and then say like, ooh, the light bulb's on. Now what? Where do I go with this if I'm 10 years old? You're not going to go to the Girl Scouts right now. But what they can do is if we had a pre-made kit that stick, which is I'm talking with Lincoln Electric on that, of like, hey, what can we do on making a pre-made kit that an adult could also learn with them and stick doesn't need gas? What is the safe lowest lift to get this in their garage per se? And then also, what is the YouTube series that needs to go with that? Or what is the, to your point, what is the Apple download that needs to go with that? Because that's going to lift way faster than us trying to say like, let's go partner with 18 different social orgs and try to get it in schools. That might happen by 2026, right? So yes, think that way. And then just think about how do we need to get it to a more expanded population? That's my direct challenge for the AWS. And I've said it to them. So like, I hope that's said in complete love and peace.
I am sure they are. Listen, it's a great organization and love working with them. I want to speak to you about success stories in the trades. I try to highlight kids who have just come out of trade school or are in trade school, because if other kids see that those kids are doing well, if they don't have to show that they, you know, they bought a Porsche or something like that. And I don't think they need to go that far, but they can say that X amount of years in a trade school, X amount of years working out in the field, I've done this. Are there any success stories that pop up in your mind? If it's a younger adult or it's a girl or a woman, like who would be a great person to highlight from a success story standpoint in the trades?
I think there's a ton. I won't use names, but I see them at least once or twice a week when I'm going, because right now I'm in a lot of a workforce development stage and then also in a startup stage of getting to one, lifting a workforce development program that is an onboard ramp that's a week long for welding so we can start attacking this 82,000 a year hyper locally here in Charlotte first and hopefully to scale in 2025. We're doing the beta test this year. And then also the Reimagined Rosies, which is more, how are we going to get in these pop-up events to girls? And then so with the workforce development, I'm talking to these employers alongside Goodwill to say, okay, what are you looking for? Who are the success stories inside of your org? And many times it's the 22 to 26 year old who came in with no TIG experience. I'm thinking of literally 2 days ago meeting a girl, a woman, excuse me, who is paying her own bills, didn't think she could be a welder, is crushing it. And women just, I don't want to typify or stereotype, but I'm a TIG welder, so I have a tendency to, we just have this thing with, we like detail. I call it sewing for welding because you have a foot pedal, you got a lot going on, you're a filler, a wire, you've got an electrode. Everything is busy between your hands, feet, brain, eyes, ears, all that's going on. And then depending on your alloy, it gets even more complicated. And she crushed it. And nobody really was like, hey, she's going to come in here and be a success story. And I don't think she did either. And so it was twofold for me. And she is one of many that I meet like this who they surprise themselves. And so this generation of the ones that are coming in right now in 2024 and deciding on welding, I think they're getting surprised at the success. And I definitely see it from women because maybe they have heard of the stigma, heard of the challenges. And it's like, well, I don't know if I'll be good enough, but I really want to do it. And they're good at it. So once they see that success, then others see it and they're like, okay. And so it's just representation, right? Once you see that small success of saying, oh, she went from like $22 an hour to 26 in 2 months, and now she's really paying her bills and she's going on vacation and she really likes her job and she's able to have that flexibility, you know, where it's 4 days a week. I think that's huge in today's generation. They see the success stories of people that have the self-care time. And so all these things we're tackling on major corporations in big industries like technology, probably about 5 years ahead of the trades. So the trades just needs to start thinking about that and putting those type of success stories of Susie gets 3 days off a week and she's able to go to the beach or she's able to do this with her time or do another gig. That is really attractive. And I think they see that as a success to your point of like, is it a big car they bought or, you know, a house, or is it just they get their time to do whatever they choose with that time? Because I do think there's a big stigma in this whole generation to come of saying, look at return to work and 9 to 5. Let's address this, that as a trade too, because if they're punching in and punching out from 8 to 5, you've got to swing that differently with this generation, because they see that as the ultimate, like, that's death. I mean, no. What is the future of work to the trade? So just address it from that. I don't have the direct answer to that, but that is seen as success from what I've seen out in the field of going to these companies that are welding.
I love sharing success stories with others out there. But a lot of kids are, and especially today, they want instant gratification. I don't want to put 5 years into this thing. I want to start making money now. I want to be a YouTube star. And I want to be the next Mr. Beast, right? They're looking at different aspects. And being on social media, I hear this a lot from other kids out there, that it's just, they still have that old stigma that it's just not, that there's no money in it. That it's really, when you're in your 40s or 50s, your back's going to be out. Like, that's the way they view things out there. But it's interesting. I have an extended family member. He was in the corporate world for 15 years. What I'm getting at is that it's never too late to join the trades, because in his mid-30s, he decided to be an electrician. And he quit his job in corporate and started all over again with the family. I don't think it's really ever too late to really swap or change over to the trades. I think some are put off that, oh, well, I'm in my 40s. I can't really do that. I don't think that's true. I think you can take up a trade. Yes, you're going to have to start from the bottom. And you have to check your instant gratification for delayed gratification. That's going to take a little bit of time. But if you're a sponge and you absorb all that information, you can climb the ladder of success and really do well in the trades. I mean, is there any pushback on that for age-wise in the trades?
Of course there's pushback in the trades. I mean, that's where I can't do that. I call it hashtag bitching and moaning. I wouldn't be in this industry if I didn't want to be a champion to everyone. But I also have a tendency to really separate myself from the people who don't have a solution in mind when they start talking about the problems. I just don't have time for it. I don't have the energy for it. It takes away from my energy of abundance of saying, like, why don't we focus on what the positives are of opportunity, right? And so to the two populations you're talking about, the career changers, you know, that speaks exactly to the Goodwill program that we're doing, this Weld Lab for a week. Those are typically the ones. I live in Charlotte suburbs, so big banking town. There's disillusioned people, whether they're college graduate, whether they're 22, whether they're 42, saying, this is awful. I'm actually at the chiropractor because I'm sitting at a desk all day. So to your point of like creaky joints, and they just want to feel alive, quite frankly, in whatever job they're in, it's not making them feel that way. So there's a lot of that interest coming in and saying, how hard is it for me to change careers and get into that? I call it the squiggly line. Like, I'm 47. If you look back at my career, because I remember for the longest time, people were like, how do we write your bio? You are such a like patchwork quilt. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm proud of it. Because every single one of those stages meant, you know, that I learned something, failed forward or succeeded forward. And now I can layer that into what I'm doing now in some way, shape or form. So I always say that to people of like, you didn't career jump unless you literally just career jumped for money. You actually learned something. And that is today of saying like, it's seasons. So it's seasonality for that older population, meaning not 18. And that's okay. Go explore and say like, we got one life. If you want to be out there digging in the dirt with your hands and landscaping, or if you want to be putting a torch in your hand and that makes you a better person when you come back to your family, go for it. Or you're making more money and that makes you more joyful, go for it. If it's more of that 18-year-old and that generation, yeah, we need to change the script for them to say, I go back to the tinkering. Because what you were saying about immediate gratification, I do hear a lot of complaints on that of like, oh, they just don't have attention spans. I've got one in my house. I know how to address her. And it's like, how can you solve this? You know, how fast can I give you the project in a way that you can assimilate to say, oh yeah, that's easy. Because they see things on the flip side and they're like, that's easy. Why do you all make things so hard? This isn't such a tough problem. And so if you can do that in your company, you get the welder in, I'll just keep it to welding, and say, hey, yes, you are just welding the same restaurant implement. You know, it's a fryer that you are welding on the line for 3 hours a day. But also, how can that make that hotter for, you know, blank brand that you go and eat at Chick-fil-A every day? What's a problem for you that you're seeing? Let's put you in the R&D lab for 2 days, work with the engineers. That's how you light their fire and keep them more engaged. I can't say that enough. If you don't have that fail forward, be curious kind of attitude in your company, which it's tougher for the trades. This is a very tech mentality right now where they're like agile thinking, fail everything. Kids have learned that way from birth on an iPad. So we have got to like layer that into companies that are in manufacturing and trades. Once you do that, I think you're really going to start connecting and keeping them in the conversation at an early age to the point of saying like, I want to be a YouTube star or Mr. Beast. It's not giving them people leadership. You learn that over time. We're not saying give them a title and make them a manager. We're saying put them in the room because they're going to solve for things that you might be talking about with your leadership group. If you can do that, you're going to be training these kids to say, I want to stay around here because they actually value my opinion on what we're building.
Commit, show up, and work your butt off. I always tell my kids that. And I try to instill that in my kids. They laugh every time. They're like, Dad, stop saying that.
I taught my kids dig the ditch because that was what my mentor in home building taught me. He was like, two things, be the got it girl. Like, I got it. When anybody says anything, and it's usually the dirtiest job to the micro piece, take the dirtiest job, get it. You will go far in life. And then the second, yeah, dig the ditch. Get in the ditch because nobody else is getting in the trench. And when you do, you're going to learn. And then you are going to be the one that is the got it girl. Like, everyone's going to ask you like, oh, she digs the ditch. Get her. I want her on the job.
In 2019, you started a nonprofit. What song did you have in mind when you founded She Built This City?
You got to go far back for some of us, but Jefferson Starship was We Built the City. No copyright issues because it's She Built the City. It's so funny where people will come up to me at events, whatever, and they start singing it. And I'm like, well, it got you to know the name, didn't it? But it was also a bigger part of saying we at the time in 2019 really need to tackle these percentages of like 3% in an industry, 5% in the vertical of the trade, whether it's HVAC, electrical, plumbing, welding. And I usually have a tendency to go to the one that has the least. That's why I'm so involved in welding right now. Plus, I love it. Plus, my DNA. But yeah, it was to say, like, how can we say just in a name what the opportunity is? That was the impetus. And plus, I just love that song. I started it, founded it, was involved for the first 2 years, and then said, I got to get out of the way. One, I don't, and I'd seen this with a lot of other founders of being founder's disease. You know, it's about your face, it's about your likeness, it's about asking you to speak. And that was never my deal of starting it. It needed to be more than I am a woman who identifies as white. I went through a corporate background first. I went to college. I am one likeness of a success story in an industry. I needed it to be about more than that. And so it was my choice to say, I'm going to step back. I'm going to get off the board. I want to get out of their way. And I wanted to let these programs come up and run the way they need to run. So I have to give them full credit now of in these last 2 years, really taking it and running with it on electrical, HVAC, getting the apprenticeships for women, and then partnering with the right companies. And can't say enough about the Lowe's partnership there. It was the first one on board when I had an idea. And I remember being in a warehouse in Charleston, South Carolina. It was pouring rain and talking to the program manager and saying, I just want to do this workshop. Do you think I can get it funded? And they're like, you got to put it on paper and send it to us and let's do it. And so huge, huge kudos to companies like Lowe's who take chances on these new initiatives and say, it might not be fully thought out here, but it's here. Let's go for it. Let's take the chance. And now you can see, you know, 4 or 5 years later, I know they just got $1 million Gable grant, huge success, and it's really able to expand the program. So one is the awareness, and two is really getting the women immersed and into these companies.
It's not easy to, as a founder, to step out of that.
Oh, it was my baby. I struggled for a good couple of months of just saying like, it's hard. And I'm not a nonprofit person by trade. I mean, I was definitely corporate for profit. That's where my bailiwick is. I realized that too, of saying like, listen, I got to get out of their way to do what they need to do to scale, because sometimes I can be so bleeding edge that I scare the living daylights out of everyone. So that's why I'm in the right place to be an advocate for them now as they really scale their programs in a defined way, you know, the way that they need to and they want to for success metrics. And I can keep coming up with these really crazy pie in the sky ideas. I like to solve for really nutty big things and then get out of the way. I come up with the big ideas and then say like, okay, how do I put the right people in place, the right executive director, the right smart people that have a big portfolio of diversity to really bring it into the room? Because I mean, if I can't walk that walk, then why am I even speaking about this stuff?
Spoken like a true visionary.
Let's hope. Yeah. On to the next era of like launching two more things. Just like you. That's why you're such a kindred spirit to me, especially on LinkedIn. It's such a pleasure to like actually get to know you and see you. I can't wait until it's in person. We have to solve for some very big things in the trades, and we have to come with positivity, and we have to come with solutions mindset. So that's my kind of ending message to everyone is like, if you're disenfranchised and you're kind of worn out, I get it. I get it. I've been there. But like, find the light that gets you excited about being able to talk about it, or just kind of like stay back and be quiet for a while. Because it's just not helping, right? We've got to come with this type of attitude and this type of energy. And that's what's going to get people excited about staying here.
Demi, you have a lot going on. What's next for Demi?
Yeah, so it's the two programs I was talking about. One is we're lifting 3 beta classes with Goodwill Construction Skills Training Center here. Been a partner of mine way back to She Built a City. They are very bleeding edge. I love Marvin, who's the executive director, who says, let's take a chance on it. Let's do this week class. Nate and I are collaborators on it with Weld Science Lab, and we are taking career changers who are interested into a week-long class of MIG. And then we've already made the partnerships with the employers to say, if we can teach them welding, which we can teach a welder in 4 days. Now, I'm not talking about jumping on a bridge right after and getting their welding certs, because I know people are going to come after me. It's more to get them into the company to onboard ramp, like we talked about at the beginning, and they can continue their training there. So we're starting with MIG, easiest process for us to teach, and then doing really good partnerships. And the hope is if we've got success there with our three cohorts in June, August, and October, we can scale that in 2025 and make it, because again, we want to solve for big things in the US and shorten that onboard ramp and get them in these jobs so they can keep learning. And then the second is Reimagined Rosies, which is building next gen STEMinists. So I want to bring all of what we talked about of that iPad generation and get them inspired and ignited so we can pipeline them into the middle schools and high schools to be asking great questions about this. We can't solve for changing all of the guidance counselors tomorrow, but we can solve for getting them excited with things they're already looking into and just adding on to it. So look for that in fall. I just did the logo today and now I've got to make it happen, but it's basically going to be very different in saying I want to do pop-up shops and go to events and festivals and teach girls to weld. I did it at TEDx. So if I can do it there, we can keep going to crazy different populations and exposing new Swifties to welding. Then they'll go ask questions and demand a program.
How do people find out? What platforms are you on? And are there any websites you want to mention for people to go to?
LinkedIn, as you know, is a huge platform for me from the more business side, which is partnerships. And I want to hear more. I'm curious, what are you doing now? Or can you come speak to my school? I love it. Just like you, I'm the first one to book the flight and say, how do we talk to someone? How do we get the word out? How do we ignite and inspire people to ask more and be curious? So you can find me on LinkedIn at Demi Knight Clark. You can find me on sparkbuildinggroup.com, which is my corporate site right now. It's about to get a whole revamp to be more on the workforce development side and with Reimagined Rosies. And then I am off the cuff as always on Instagram. So I'm at Girl Friday's Garage.
Demi, it was a pleasure to meet you. One day we will meet in person, whether it's at FabTech or another show. Thank you for being on the show and telling us about your background and what you're doing in the industry. You're certainly making an impact out there. I want to say thank you to our listeners, where our mission is to flip the script on the blue-collar skilled trades and make them cool once again.
You've been listening to the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades podcast.
Sure, nothing wrong with going to college, but there's just as much honor and need for people to be blue-collar workers that are the very backbone of our infrastructure. Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, follow Andrew Brown on LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and hit the website at www.andrewbrowntrades.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.